Okay, let's get started.
Wait, just a minute, partner.
No.
Guess again, freak boy.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
AudioTU.com. Another fresh picked pod from AudioTU.com. Shutters Inc. with Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 37 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from AudioTU.com, and with me, back from his romantic weekend away, Shelton Muller. How are you?
You're a shocker, Bruce. I'm not telling you anything in future.
Oh, come on.
Just make, you know, the whole world listening in on my love life. Yeah.
Was it a good weekend away?
Lovely, actually. Not only did I get a chance to get into a bed and breakfast, which was really nice. Just to, you know, it's lovely just to get away, and but spent some time with my mum and dad who live up in the hills here in Melbourne. And a bit of therapy. You know, life gets really busy, yep. And you sometimes just need to chill
unplug.
Out and have you unplug and yep. have your mum pamper you with, you know, good breakfasts and, you know, cups
some
of coffee.
Good old home style cooking.
Oh yeah, yeah. Not that my wife's bad for the home style cooking, but you know, it's just nice to be away. I caught up with the entire family, which was my sisters, their husbands, their family. It was really, really great. There's nothing like family, I tell you what. Nothing like family.
Yeah.
So yeah, had a really lovely time. But excellent. You know, back getting back into work, getting back into the swing of things, and ready to talk to all our listeners, of course.
Fantastic. And this week, of course, we're gonna follow on with part two of our discussion on colour.
Yes, for sure. Before I do that, let me just answer Angelo's question. He's from Toronto, as they call it, Toronto in Canada. His question has to do with phone cameras, the new Sony Ericsson that you ask about, Angelo. Look, I must admit, when you ask me about, you know, particular models and makes of cameras, particular models and makes, especially of camera phones, it's not something that I devote myself to knowing a lot about. To me, photography is an art, and you need the technology to do it. So where needed, I find out the technology and I apply it. In this particular case, I don't think I could really answer you, you know, as well as maybe someone else, as to whether you should, you know, invest in this CyberShot phone. I'll have to look it up, to be quite honest with you. But all I know is that from my perspective, cameras are designed to take pictures and phones are designed to make calls and receive calls. I believe that it would be very difficult to have, you know, a piece of technology that did either justice, especially in terms of taking pictures. You mentioned that it has image stabilization and a 16 times digital zoom. Digital zoom always worries me, for one. But most telephone cameras that I know have bigger problems than that, and that is poor lens quality and bad metering. Now, if this has answered those problems, then, you know, buy it as a phone and use it as a camera when you need to. But to me, if you want to take pictures, carry a proper camera around. I, as I've mentioned in previous podcasts, have fallen in love with the Ricoh GR Digital, which is a fabulous little camera. But there's some really beautiful compacts out there that take some excellent, excellent pictures. To me, you can have that on your hip just as well, and carry it in a little pouch on your hip and take pictures, and, you know, not have to worry, you know, about quality. Those, to me, are the issues. So I will answer your question not based on this particular product, but rather on principle, Angelo, and I hope you don't mind me doing that. And Bob Fisher, thank you very much for your compliment on last week's podcast regarding color. Very much appreciated. And for, of course, your compliment on my picture of Machu Picchu. But let me tell you, it's hard to take a bad picture of Machu Picchu. But I appreciate your compliment, Bob. Thank you. Let's talk about color, though, because we did talk about the emotion of color and how to use color last week. But in digital imaging, a lot of people find it difficult to get color correct. Let's start by saying that has always been the case. When we, you know, used to shoot with film in the, you know, in that, what was it, the 20th century? Up till recently, and of course probably a lot of our listeners still do shoot with film, we always had a problem with correct color. And it really didn't matter what you were, you know, using, what kind of film or what kind of camera. There's always been an issue with correct color. People seem to have gone a little bit overboard on the subject now that we're shooting digitally and we have perhaps more of a personal responsibility to get the color right before we send it off to print. point. It's become incumbent upon the photographer now to get the color correct before he sends it off to the lab. So things have changed dramatically. However, a lot of labs still do color correction, but at a fee, if you indeed, you know, are a little bit worried that you haven't got yours right before you've, you know, uploaded it to them or given them the CD before they print or whatever. But let's remember that film is in itself variable, it's objective, it's subjective, whichever one I forget, to, you know, circumstances, to your personal tastes. And there used to be, and still are, all sorts of films that, you know, had different color biases. People used to buy, you know, different films because they liked the red in this or they liked the blue in that. And that used to be, people would say, oh, I'll buy Agfa because I like the blues or the reds or the greens, or I buy Fuji because I like the green, or buy Kodak because I like the red or the blue. I was talking about that with a fellow photographer yesterday.
Of course, you could have always just got around that whole thing by just saying, buy Velvia and get all of it.
Well, you see, I'm not a huge Velvia fan, so
Really?
Our case in point.
Okay.
I think it's a fabulous film, but it's not certainly not the be-all and end-all. For landscape, green landscape, absolutely fabulous. For skin tones, I didn't think it was particularly good. So
you would
have to buy a film according to its color bias or its color preference. So color has always been an issue. And if you photographed using negative film, you know, print film, you'd send it off to a lab, and you would always get from every different lab different color biases. There was one lab I used to use, and I'd send off my wedding rolls to them, you know, and the prints would come back very warm, you know, beautiful warm skin tones, because that was the way the lab printed. They were used to printing weddings and portraits, and they would deliberately enhance the skin tones. If I took that same negative to another lab, they would print it differently. How they would print it would be up to the printer's eye, the printing machine that they used, the printing paper they used, the chemicals they used, the filtration they used. So let's get a balance on this before we even start. The color has always been something that is, you know, variable, it's up to the photographer's eye, and has always been an issue. And it's perhaps becoming a little bit, and I'll say it, we're going perhaps a little bit overboard sometimes now, that we are shooting digitally on getting this absolutely spot on. Because let's face it, there is no such thing as absolutely spot on. It's always going to be a subjective issue.
Would you not agree that it's actually a good thing, though? Because people are, you know, for almost forcing themselves to learn one of the technical aspects that up until now we've never had to bother about?
It is a good thing, provided it doesn't take the joy out of the process.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that's the problem. You're absolutely right, Bruce. People should be concerned about color and skin tone and that kind of thing, and we'll talk about how to make that easy in a minute. But the issue to me is I've had a lot of conversations with photographers about this, that they freak out about it, you know, and it takes a lot of the joy out of it. I'm the same as you. I want to get color right, especially skin tones, and that's a hard thing to do. But in the end, you just have to say to yourself, well, you know, I don't want to freak out about this. I don't want this to become an overly technical process that robs my joy of the picture-taking process or the post-process, the digital darkroom process.
Yeah.
So let's talk about getting it right in the first place. In film days, we used to have to buy film that was calibrated to daylight, for instance. Unless, of course, you're shooting tungsten, you'd buy tungsten balanced film. But most film you bought, whether it be print film or transparency film, was daylight balanced. Now, in digital cameras, of course, you can set your white balance to those, you know, those factors. If you used daylight balanced film in tungsten lighting, you used to have to use a filter to correct, or you'd get a brown cast. Or if you used daylight balanced film under fluorescent light, you used to get a green cast. And so you had to use filtration anyway, because, you know, daylight balanced film under those conditions always shifted. But daylight balanced film also shifted in daylight, because daylight itself has several different color temperatures depending on whether it's a cloudy day, what time of day you're shooting in, what circumstances you find yourself in, whether you're in shade or in broad daylight. So all of these things were variable and subjective to the conditions. A lot of digital cameras, of course, every digital camera these days has white balance settings. Most people, I would presume, and I'll say that I will presume, set their cameras to auto white balance. This would be particularly true of most, you know, family snap shooters with a digital camera. They'd let the camera decide what the automatic white balance is so that the colors would be correct. Now, in most cameras, it's actually pretty good. And I've seen quite a lot of differences between cameras on how good the white balance is. The auto white balance on the new D200, for instance, is excellent. But on the D100, I didn't find it anywhere near as good. But I usually prefer to set my white balance anyway. If I'm in daylight, then I'll set it according to daylight. If I'm using flash, I'll use flash. If I'm tungsten, I'll use tungsten. So I set my white balance while I'm taking the photograph so that I've got a bit of a head start before I even get into the post process. And that's, you know, something I'd recommend everybody do. You can, of course, do a bit of an experiment. Take two pictures, one using auto white balance and one using the white balance that you would think necessary. You know, for instance, if you're shooting with flash or if you're shooting daylight or under tungsten, set it to that particular white balance and see what the difference is and see whether you actually have a personal preference. Because as we've said before, a lot of this is very, very subjective.
It'll also give you an idea of just how accurate your camera is at judging it in auto mode.
Yes, absolutely. And that's a good thing to know. If you can trust your camera, it takes a heck of a lot of mucking about out of the whole process. And the other thing is that photographers will sometimes deliberately set the white balance to a different setting. If, for instance, I've used a cloudy setting in daylight in order to warm up a skin tone. I did this particularly with the D100. I haven't done it yet with the D200 because I've been quite pleased, but in the D100 I felt it needed to be warmer, and so I would use the cloudy setting to shoot portraits, to warm skin tones. I would do that quite often and was, you know, quite pleased with the result. But again, that was my eye and that was my take on it, and others may completely disagree. I have recently seen the work of a photographer, an American photographer, who will shoot in daylight. Set his camera to tungsten and he gets his very blue cast, but then he uses flash with a brown or with a warm filter on it so to correct the skin tones for the portrait. So he's got this blue photograph but with natural skin tones. It's quite stunning. So you can use color, white balance rather, to create some stunning effects, which we used to do with film and can still do in camera or, you know, in the post process also. So we've taken our picture, we've decided what white balance we want to use, but of course that can be a problem because, as we've said, light is not a consistent thing, especially daylight. It has different, you know, color temperatures as the sun travels through the day and as you know, it goes behind clouds or, you know, wherever we are or what light's reflecting off of and all those other things. So let's say we take this image now and we open it up on the computer. Well, first of all, let's make sure that we understand the variables here, because if you're working in a room that is lit with a fluorescent, you're going to perhaps see things a little bit differently. Our eyes automatically white balance, but it will tend to change the way we see the image on the screen. If we're working under a tungsten light, again, how our eyes white balance will naturally affect how we work with the image. If we're working with window light in our office, in our digital darkroom, that again is a completely different kind of light or color temperature, and it will alter the way we see the image on the screen. The screen itself, is the screen properly calibrated? What kind of screen are you using? Are you using a standard monitor or a TFT or what sort of, you know, computer screen are we using? Then, of course, what lab are we sending it to and how will they print it? On what paper will they print it? What chemicals will they use? How will what you see on your screen translate to how they print it? Are you calibrated with the lab? That's what I've done, you know, basically spoken to my lab. They've given me, you know, samples and a CD, and I've calibrated my screen to the best of my ability to the lab that I use to make my prints. So there's all sorts of variables before we even open the image in Photoshop. Let's say we've opened the image in Photoshop now and we see that perhaps let's say we've done a portrait and the skin tone is a little warm or a little red or a little green, whatever it might be. I've found a very, very quick way that we're going to talk about in a minute to correct that. But you can use the hue saturation mode, you can use the color balance mode, or you can use match color mode. In Photoshop, you've got these, you know, tools to play with to balance your color. In color balance, yeah, exactly. I'm going to get to that in a minute.
Okay.
In Photoshop, you've got color balance. You go image, adjustments, color balance, and you've got these sliders that you can use to, you know, and will preview so you can correct your color if you think it's too cyan or, you know, too green or whatever. You've got the hue saturation mode, and of course you can change your, and I'm not going to do a Photoshop lesson here because that's, you know, that's a completely different thing, but you can use hue and saturation to alter.
And there are some great podcasts around on Photoshop too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm going to probably avoid doing a lot of that because of that reason. There are much better podcasts than me on the subject of Photoshop. I'm more for, you know, the techniques of taking and than I am about the post-process, I must admit. But then there's, of course, match color. If you have a particular print in a series, let's say you've done a series of portraits and you've got one right, you can use the match color mode in Photoshop to make them all, you know, the same. But as you said, you can use curves and levels. You're talking about the eyedropper mode, Bruce?
I tend to find that I use levels more than anything, and I actually do it manually for each channel.
Right.
Like, I'll probably hit the auto button first, and then I'll go to each channel and then manually tweak the three little triangles, you know, the dark point, the midpoint, and the light point, and watch the live preview. That's the way I generally work.
Yes, and that's an excellent way to work because you're not, you know, you can change one color, you know, one of the primary colors without altering the others. And that's very, very good. In color balance and in hue saturation, you usually, unless of course you've set it otherwise, tend to alter all of them simultaneously. Yeah. So your method is correct and can be and very accurate. I'm talking about a very quick fix method, which I use, which uses the eyedroppers in curves and levels. So let's say you open your image. Then you go to either curves or levels, whichever you prefer. You will notice that down on the bottom of that palette are three eyedroppers. And you use them to alter or to get a correct white or a point. And once you've got a white, often the other colors will follow. This isn't a be-all and end-all fix, but I found it very effective for a quick fix and what I would refer to as an accurate enough fix in most cases. So you open up your curves or your levels, it really doesn't matter which, and down the bottom right-hand corner, you're going to find three eyedroppers. The one on the right is an eyedropper that will set a white point, the one on the left will set a black, and the one in the middle is the one you use. So you click on that, and then you go over to your image. Now the middle eyedropper sets a gray point, but if you take that middle eyedropper and you click on something that should be white, let's say for instance a bridal dress, the highlight in an eye, the white point or teeth, and you click on it, and let's say for instance your image is a little bit warm, you click on the image using that middle eyedropper on a point that should be white, and it will alter the entire image, making that particular point white, and then by, you know, just because it alters everything else, will correct, as I've found quite accurately, everything else simultaneously. That is a very quick fix, but I have found it to be quite accurate, and I use it. What I'll do is I'll find, you know, like I say, the whites of the eyes, or a highlight in a bridal dress, or I'll even find maybe a gray point, which you can use, like a rock in a landscape, or, you know, whatever that, you know, will set a tone that doesn't alter the brightness of the image. If you use the eyedropper on the right or the eyedropper on the left, it actually alters the brightness of the image. It will find a correct white or a correct black, but it will alter the brightness. The gray, the middle eyedropper, will not alter the brightness. It will only alter the color, and therefore give you a very quick fix on something that could be really, really difficult. It's a quick fix, like I say, and your method is very correct, and every photographer who works with Photoshop will have his or her own methods of, you know, correcting color. Those can be very long, drawn-out processes, and that's my concern, I suppose. When you're working on, when you've come back from holidays and you've got a few hundred images and you're a little bit worried about the color of them, it's going to take forever to alter them, and that's a bit bit of a concern for me, because people suddenly find themselves sitting in front of computers and not enjoying the process. They're mucking about with things that they never had to worry about. I like my quick fix, to be honest with you, and I'd suggest you give it a try.
It works
very well, and is from... And people could criticize me for saying this, but I'm going to say it is accurate enough in most cases, especially when you're working on, you know, a whole bunch of images. And I get back to my original argument that color, the nature of color and how we see color is subjective, it's individual, and is not always going to be accurate. The only accurate color... Look, even the human eye will see things differently. People see things differently. You know, men see colors differently to women. The whole issue of color is relative, subjective, and we shouldn't freak out about it. That's my point. Let's make sure that we've got colors correct. We've got all sorts of technology to do that. But at the same time, let's not take the joy out of it by getting overtly technical, overtly... what's the word I'm looking for? Technological, whatever. You know what I'm saying? That we actually lose the joy of the whole process and still find ourselves arguing about it in the end.
I think obsessed was what you were looking for.
That's the word. Yeah, that's the word. That's the word. Because you can become obsessive about these things, and photography is all subjective and relative. Everything about it is. There is nothing that I've ever found that is an absolute. So let's just remember that. And if we've got a few methods in place while we take the photographs, and then a couple of methods in place thereafter, we should find that we're not going to worry too much about it and enjoy the simple process of taking pictures. That's my concern.
We just need you to start your own religion, Shelton. If we could just get a religion that understood that there are no absolutes, then maybe the world would be a happier place.
I believe, that in life there are some absolutes, but in photography, absolutely not. Yeah. We should be as kind as we most absolutely can, and we should be as loving as we absolutely can. Those are absolutes, the universal absolutes we are too small to comprehend, perhaps sometimes. But when it comes to photography, it's an art, and it's something you're supposed to enjoy. Let's just remember that and do the best we can with it, without becoming obsessive, without getting bogged down in the difficulties that have plagued us since color photography began.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you for that. I'll definitely be trying out your little eyedropper trick.
Let me know how you go.
Yeah, for sure. Now, we had a bit of a long one this week, but you can consider that a little bit of a gift, because there'll be no Shutters Inc. for two more weeks. Mm-hmm. I'm off to California this Saturday.
Going to California. What a great Led Zeppelin song that is.
And I will be away for basically about 9 days. I get back the following Sunday, so it means there'll be no podcasts from Audio to You this weekend or next weekend, but we will be back with new podcasts on Sunday the 18th June.
What that does is give our listeners a lot of opportunities to think about what they want to talk about, what they need answers to, get to us, and we can handle them in future podcasts. So I'm appealing to you all, use this time to think now, what do I want to know? And let us know so that we can answer them for you.
Absolutely. Mate, I'll tell you what, my good fortune with this trip just keeps on getting better and better. You know, I was talking to Dave, my mate that I record music with, the other night on Skype, and he says to me, are you going to catch any live gigs while you're there? And I said, oh, mate, I'm not going to have time, you know, I'm going to be flat out. And he said, oh, yeah, what about Springsteen? And I said, mate, Springsteen's not going to be touring. And he said, yeah, he's on tour at the moment. And I said, okay. And what do you know? Not only is the guy touring, but he's playing LA 2 days after I fly in.
Oh, wow.
So
you're going to go see the boss?
I am. I checked Ticketmaster and it was all sold out, so I got onto eBay and managed to pick up a ticket from there. So
well done.
Yeah, I'm stoked, because he's probably not going to bring this tour to Australia. So I'm going to get to see him on his home turf.
Wow.
So yeah, I'm just absolutely stoked.
We expect a full report upon your return. Well done.
Definitely. And what a great venue. It's the Greek Theatre.
Oh,
you know,
where, if you've, yeah. Well, mate, then
I think everybody remembers Hot August Night, you know.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And Live at the Greek, wasn't that his follow-up?
Yeah.
Neil Diamond. Yep. Yeah, so well done, mate. And I suppose I've only got one thing to say now. Shut up, will you?
All right, mate. I'll talk with you in a couple of weeks.
I'm looking forward to it, and we'll catch up with everybody soon.
All right, mate. Bye.
Take care.
You've been listening to another Fresh Picked Pod from audio2u.com. Audio2U delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable.
You be the boss.
Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear it.
Hey, now that's a good idea.
Audio2U.com. Hit us today.
And remember,
Control D to bookmark.
Audio2U.com.